All right, great to have you back with us as we get ready for Bay Bridge baseball today. The A's and the Giants from the Coliseum. Alex Wood, the lefty on the hill. And Ken Waldachuk is on the hill for the Athletics. He is a lefty as well. A couple of crazy predictions here. Bill Sims, a good friend. Giants win 105 and take the West. Okay. And our friend Rick Robin, 76 games for the Giants, and he will be at Mardi Gras and opening day. So got those two in if you have a crazy prediction at Baseball Marty on Twitter. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Marty. How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's the team is now in the big ballpark. Arizona is over, and it's the Bay Bridge series. And, you know, I was thinking, I said this on the show during spring. Remember, Sandy Alderson would do anything to beat the Giants. He would start the regular guys in spring training games. Now it's the Bay Bridge series. Lost a little bit of the luster, but still a nice way to start a season.
Yeah, I remember one game in Arizona when La Russa was managing and Sandy was there, and the A's had a one-run lead after all the craziness of a typical spring training game, and he brings in Eck to make sure they close it out.
I remember they scored 19 one time, I think.
So
that's A's Giants baseball, and I guess it made me think of a couple of people today. I swear to you, Ray Fossey. The late Ray Fossey, who lost about 18 months ago, and Sam Spear. You know, I love talking ball with Sam and those luncheons when Ray Fossey and Crook would go at it before the Bay Bridge series. Remember those luncheons that the TV used to have, Comcast or whatever preceded Comcast?
Yeah, you know, the A's always have, I don't know if you want to call it an inferiority complex, but I think, you know, Crook and Kipe get so much attention, and rightfully so, and you know, Fossey kind of standing up for his end. And he's a very compelling speaker. I got to know him way, way back in the early 80s when I started covering the A's. And he was just starting out, too, in radio and television. But, I really do miss Ray. I miss his handshake. My hand itself doesn't, but I miss it.
He would give me a shot in the stomach, too, after the handshake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like talking to Ray. I was one of the few that could actually talk to him about Pete Rose. And, you know, everyone was hesitant to approach him, but he was bitter right to the end about Pete Rose. He was, and Pete probably went out of his way to get to Ray in the 70 All-Star game and really changed Ray's career. Ray, honestly, Bruce, Ray was one of the top catchers, like a Thurman Munson type in the American League.
He really was very good. Had some power. Maybe hit around 270, extremely good defensively, handled the pitchers well, and, you know, it's just a shame that the so-called Buster Posey rule wasn't in place then, because that was, especially because it was an all-star game, you know, Pete Rose, he just didn't have to do that, you know, and that's the way he played, and it's hard to hold it against him, but I was kind of resentful, too. I'm a big Pete Rose fan, you know, as a player, and the way he went after it, but that always bothered me as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We talked to Farhan last week about the catching situation and also Gabe Kapler, too. And they said, well, you know, the catching is sort of up in the air. I guess Joey Bart is it. I mean, I still haven't seen any definitive statement that Joey is the guy, but I'm sure he will be. But they talked about the fact they don't like to trade for a catcher or bring a catcher in late in spring training. It made me think of Ray Fossey. Remember, they traded him. They brought him in from Cleveland like in the last week of spring training in 1973, and he caught that staff for two World Series.
Yeah, heck of a trade. You know, Dave Duncan anchored that staff over the years, and they certainly didn't get a lot of play. When you're talking Reggie Jackson, you know, and Vida Blue and Catfish Hunter and all the big stars on that team, those guys got a little short shrift, but, you know, the bottom line is, that was a tough, excellent, and also tough pitching staff to handle. You know, a lot of personalities, a lot of different stuff and approaches, and, you know, no-nonsense guys who were going to humiliate a young catcher if they weren't ready to step in there with him. And Fossey definitely came in there and just established himself.
Yeah, so I think of Ray today, Sam Spear, Elliot Schwartz, Ron Rosenblum, you know, the people who love the game at the Coliseum and love seeing the Giants and the A's play. So we got a little bit of that today. Bruce, Casey Schmidt at short today, you get to see him. He is the Barney Nugent Award winner. He was the top newcomer in the camp this year. I'm anxious to see what you think of him as a shortstop today, because they are definitely pushing that. If something happens where they need a backup midseason, they like him at short.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great to see the Giants on television. There haven't been nearly enough televised spring games. You know, some teams televise just about all of them, so we haven't seen a lot of anybody really on TV. But, yeah, Schmidt is such an interesting character. He's really, you know, they don't have a backup shortstop unless you count the second baseman. You know, so Schmidt is going to figure at some point. There seems to be no doubt that he's going to come up. I've seen some clips of his defensive plays, whatever it might be, to his left, to his right, charging, you know, rockets right at him. He's just a very good shortstop. And yet our standards are high here with Brandon Crawford. It doesn't get much higher than that. So that's a huge, you know, level that he's trying to reach. But he seems to be the real thing defensively. And he's interesting as a hitter, too. He's struck out a few too many times. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets in there and he holds his hands high above his head, which doesn't do any good for anybody. He gets them back down when the pitch comes in. It's just interesting how guys will do that. I mean, you know, Buster Posey and Goldschmidt drape the bat over their shoulder down by their back before the pitch comes in, and that doesn't do you any good either. But when the pitch comes in, they're standard approach and they're ready to hit. So whatever makes a guy comfortable. But I just wonder how the Giants feel about that.
Well, he hasn't been overwhelmed anywhere yet.
Yeah.
So the big thing is, you're right, Bruce, 17 strikeouts, one walk, something like that. And, you know, that's not going to play in today's baseball. You got to be a bit more selective at the plate. That's the Matos situation. You know, he swings at everything, but he doesn't make the contact like this guy. So we'll see. But it's fun to see him in the big ballpark. And it's a testament to the development of Casey that we're going to see him in there today. So I like it. I'm glad to see that. The other one, Bruce, is Bryce Johnson. You know, look, he's playing left field today. They have a decision to make. Do you put Blake Sable in left field against the Yankees? You know, you just think of left field at Yankee Stadium and all the disasters that have happened to left fielders out there over the years.
Norm Seaburn.
Yeah, that comes to mind right away. Of course, that was October. Norm Seaburn missed a bunch of fly balls. Next week, he was in Kansas City. And that's what they did to him. But do you put Johnson in left or Sable, who's really never played a lot of, you know, obviously he's never played a game in the major leagues. He was a catcher pretty much. And now the Giants are using him in left. He's a left-handed hitter. Johnson steals bases like crazy. So we get to see him today in left, and I'm thinking, well, maybe Yaz center, Johnson in left against the Yankees.
Well, that's the way I'd like to see it. I mean, Sable's a good hitter, but he's, you know, he's basically trying to make the team as a catcher. So whatever happens out there is sort of automatically going to be temporary. I'd rather see them throw Johnson right in there. It's a big stage for sure, and he's sort of coming out of nowhere a little bit, but he's 12 for 12 in stolen bases. You know, he's a very good defensive player. He's probably their best. I've heard he's their best defensive option in center field if it came to that. So I'd love to see him, Johnson, out there.
Okay, well, that may be an audition today for him. I haven't seen much of him in left field. He's been playing center. But, Bruce, he's 12 for 12 and not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. John Shea had a big article today about the new rules, and I see you retweeted it. Are you comfortable with all the new rules now that you've seen a few games?
Oh, hell yes. I'm so comfortable with them. You know, it reminded me a lot. John Shea expressed very well what John Miller told me the other day. He said he was watching a film of the 1953 World Series. It's Game 7, right? Yankees and the Dodgers. It's a game where Billy Martin made a desperate running catch that saved it. And, you know, it's the kind of game that today would probably take, or last year, last 10 years, would probably take 3 hours and 30 minutes. And it took about half that time. And as he watched it, none of the hitters stepped out at all, really, unless, you know, they were brushed back or, you know, something untoward. The pitchers work fast. It's not like they're inventing a new game to play. This is the way it was played for decades on end. The hitters get in the box. What are you there for? You're there to hit. You're not there to leave. You're not there to leave the mound. And it's just so simple. Somehow it got away from them, and it's too bad that they had to, you know, put in a rule to enforce it. But I think once the violations get sorted out and reduced and guys adjust and start playing at a quicker pace, I just think it's wonderful. The idea of a clock on the game is kind of annoying. That I think the saving grace is that the pitchers will eventually, they won't even think about it. It'll be second nature, and it's not going to be this big countdown thing. It's just going to be a normal thing. I love the shift rules. I love seeing the base hit the center coming back. I love seeing hard hit balls get their just reward to right center. I like the way the rules are bending the stolen bases situation a little bit too. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. And you know what I really like about it too, and John Shea, he embodied this, is that it starts up a whole new dialogue about baseball as you're watching the game. I think in a very pleasant way. I mean, I'm a traditionalist, you know, as strong as you can get. But I've tried to go the other way and just, you know, try to welcome all the changes. And it's great to talk about. You know, the more you talk about it, the more you see it, the more it seems perfectly okay, because the essence of the game really hasn't changed, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A good analysis there, Bruce. A good summary. For me, it's not the clock. It's the running game, and I saw it in spring training, Bruce. I mean, the Giants stole, 32 out of 40, whatever it was. They led the major leagues in attempts. Teams like the Reds and the Royals, teams that don't have great power, they're running. So that's number one. And number two, it's the shift. Bruce, I can't tell you how many balls I saw hit between first and second that go into the outfield that I'm saying to myself, if there was someone standing there, that guy is out. And I saw it, I swear to you, 2-3 times a game.
Yeah, that's just wrong. And, to me, it's not so much what the time of the game is. Was it a good game? And you have a much better chance of having a good game if it's played at a quick pace. The defenders aren't sitting back on their heels. They're making more plays than they would before. The fans are not staring into their phones. And it makes it just a better game by nature. So I'm not so much watching the time of the game, but just how enjoyable it is.
Yeah, it's definitely different. And for the fans who've seen it on TV, wait till you get to the ballpark today and tomorrow night just to see what Bruce and I are talking about, because you will see a difference. There is a difference in the way the game is played. So we'll see how that works out. Well, opening day, Yankee Stadium. Have you had opening days in Yankee Stadium before?
I have not. I covered the A's there a lot, but it was always around midseason. The great Baltimore, Boston, New York run that they'd go on for years. That was about the best road trip you could ever have as a writer. But no, haven't been there. I've been there for some old-timers days at a time when, DiMaggio and Mantle would go out there, and if the A's were in town and Billy Martin would be there, and you kind of get the chills with all the greats that are showing up for that. And they do things like the Giants, but they just have even more tradition. But never an opening day. That's pretty special.
Yeah, Giants do it well, thanks to Mario Alioto. He does it the best. He has that feel. Mario, 50 years with the organization, does it so beautifully.
He sure does.
It's funny. Gabe Kapler, I think Gabe Kapler has loosened up a lot this spring. And even though, he's analytically oriented, he's answering questions more in a general baseball sense. And the back and forth with him, and I know spring training is a lot lighter, it was very, very, just so much fun. I can't tell you how much fun I had with him going back and forth. And I hadn't had that experience with him before in spring training. So I expect a little more with the fans and some excitement with him this year. But he said something that made me think about what you just said. I said, "You ever hit a home run in Yankee Stadium?" And he said, "Yeah, two of them." And I said, "Well, you mean opposite field?" And he says, "Well, what do you mean? Because it's so short in right field?" I said, "Well, I thought maybe you hit it the other way." He says, "No, I pulled it." And and I know, pulling a ball in Yankee Stadium is still a shot. It's still a shot. So he claims, I said, "I'll have to see it on tape, that you pulled two home runs." But we had that kind of conversation, and I it's different. The Giants need it. They need a little more personality with the manager just interacting with the fans, and I think we're going to see that this year. I really do.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, when he showed up, he was walking on eggshells a little bit. There was a lot of skepticism about him. You know, some of the things that went down with the Dodgers, he had some instant critics before he made a move, you know, and they were waiting for him to do something weird and wacky that didn't work like it in Philadelphia and all that. And it turns out the guy can manage, and he's really an interesting guy. I mean,
and
a great talker, you know, and it makes sense that, you know, the 107 wins did more for him than you can even describe. But, you know, now we got a fresh season, and he's even more relaxed. And I think it's a terrific thing. It's the natural order of things. Is I think he's, you know, proving that he's a big league manager for real, and he's extremely interesting background. And you know, he's come to realize that the writers aren't there to jump all over him. They're kind of fascinated by him, and a good back and forth is terrific.
Yeah, it was good. It was as good as anyone I've had conversations with, and I hope that it continues into the season. But you're right, a very, very interesting guy. And look, he's managed, this is what, 6 years, four here and two at Philly. So this is his seventh year as a manager, so he's got some experience. Boy, every year, you know, you used to do this at the Chronicle. I loved it. Your little previews of what could happen of the teams as we end the spring training. Can you do a couple for us this morning?
Yeah, well, I like the St. Louis Browns and the Boston Braves, of course. I love those guys.
1953,
sure. Yeah, those teams.
What a race.
Watch out. I'll tell you, I like San Diego in the West. I'm backing Tatis all the way. I think he's capable of coming back and being the great entertainer and performer that he is. He's out there with Machado, and Soto's going to have a monster year, and Bogarts, and it's a good staff with Darvish and Musgrove and Snell. I like San Diego a lot. I think the Dodgers would be second. They've lost an awful lot with Turner and Lux. I mean, you look at them, they got Vargas at second, Rojas at third, James Outman in center, Peralta in left, you know, and Muncy a little out of position at third. I mean, this is not the Dodgers you remember. So I'm definitely going with San Diego. I think the Giants, you know, can give the Dodgers at least a pretty good run. I think they'll have to fend off Arizona for third. You know, Arizona with Zach Allen and Bumgarner, a lot of good young hitters. Corbin Carroll's going to start there. And Evan Longoria is playing there. They'll be interesting. I don't see much for Colorado. I feel bad for Chris Bryant. You know, I hope he and his family enjoy that outdoor life, because you're not going anywhere in Colorado, like, you know, ever. In the Central, I'm going to go with the Cardinals. I think the star power of Goldschmidt and Arenado is huge. Contreras is a good replacement for Yadier Molina. I like Edmund. The pitching's a little bit up in the air, but I don't think Milwaukee has quite enough to catch them. In fact, I'm picking the Cubs to finish second with Hosmer and Dansby Swanson and Bellinger in there. Three if Bellinger hits, that's three really good guys, and Suzuki's going to be better. They're going to be fun. I don't find the Brewers fun in any respect, really. I'm going to go with Pittsburgh. They've got a lot of really good young players, especially O'Neill Cruz, who hits the ball harder and throws the ball harder than anybody in the game. I mean, that alone makes him an interesting guy. You know, with Brian Reynolds and McCutcheon and Cabrian Hayes, Charlie Hayes' kid is coming on at third. And I think the Reds have lost too much in their lineup. They got Will Myers, but it's probably not enough. Fourth and fifth's kind of a toss-up there. The East is the most interesting one. What a race that's going to be with the Mets, Atlanta, and the Phillies. I think even though they lost Edwin Diaz, and that's really tough, I think the Mets, you know, they lost DeGrom too. Those are two massive losses. But, you know, Scherzer and Verlander, come on, that's off the good. And if Kodai Senga, the pitcher from Japan, is as good as they say he is, they're going to have a really good rotation. I think David Robertson can replace Diaz. His career ERA is under 3 and a lot of playoff experience. And they should have Correa. To me, there's still no excuse that they don't have Carlos Correa at third to play with Lindor. They don't, but I still think they have just enough to fend off Atlanta. I noticed Kyle Wright's on the injured list today with a shoulder problem. They've got two rookies in the rotation in Atlanta. Really good team. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be very good, but I think the, you know, and then you got the Phillies who were in the World Series. Great move to get Trey Turner, to get Schwarber and Harper. Ideally, he's going to be back, and Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler at the rotation. I don't like Craig Kimbrell as the closer at all. I don't see him holding that job. But I think the Phillies take a little bit of a slide, And then Miami's going to be fun. You know, Contra and Jazz Chisholm and Jesus Luzardo can pitch. They're going to be good. Cueto's in that mix. They're a fun team to watch. As opposed to Washington, which is it's amazing to think that these guys had Harper and Soto and Turner and Scherzer and Anthony Rendon, and I don't know what they have left. I like Josiah Gray, the Dodge kid they got from the Dodgers as a potential ace, but they're going to be fifth, and that's my instant analysis. It's all going to be wrong, so don't pay any attention to it.
No, we love it. You used to do it every year in the Chronicle and on that Sunday before the season opens. I always look forward to it. Well, it's going to be a good league. I mean, other than probably Cincinnati, and they've got Ashcroft, and they've got Green and Lodolo, three of the best starting pitchers in the league, and they'll probably come in last. O'Neill Cruz could go 30-30. Eno Saris had a terrific article yesterday in The Athletic about the things I'm saying now. Washington, I think you could say goodbye now to them. And Colorado, who knows? It just never happens, but who knows?
Right.
And I think we're in for a good league, honestly.
Oh, no doubt.
I think it's a good National League this year, except for a couple of teams. And, heck, if the Cubs come in second, that's excitement for Wrigley, and that's always fun. Very good.
Oh, absolutely. I think once the playoffs sort out, you're going to have every team in the playoffs is going to be worth watching. You're going to be glad that the playoffs have been expanded the way they have been. It's more games, and there aren't going to be any dull teams in there. So, and just right off the bat to see how everybody fares. You know, that's the beauty of opening day, opening month, to see how it actually sorts out after all this speculation.
I know. Can't wait. That's what baseball is all about. Well, FP has texted us, and he said, listen, left field is easy to play in the new Yankee Stadium, and the ball flies. And I said, look, I like my story better.
It's a very different park than the one that, from the 50s and all the way back. It's still Yankee Stadium, but there's a few things about it that, the way the ball flies out to right field is just disgraceful now. It's too cheap. You know, I mean, Ruth had a big advantage there, and Roger Maris and everybody else with the 296. but now you just hit a poke a line drive out there, and you trot around the bases.
Yeah. So, I appreciate FP. He knows the game cold. But as I said in Liberty Valance, the man who shot Liberty Valance, when, the fiction becomes truth, stay with the fiction. So that.
Absolutely. I never let facts get in the way personally, Marty.
Yeah, that's my pop culture for today. All right. Have a good Sunday. And, look, I can't wait to talk to you next weekend. There will be games 2 and 3 from Yankee Stadium, and we're underway, and the story begins. Perfect.
That is sweet.
Thank you. Thank
you.
You
bet. Talk then.
All right. All right. Pleasure. That's a Sunday morning conversation with the great Bruce Jenkins. All right. More coming up. Sergio Romo is going to join us next right here. Find out a lot about his feelings coming up. And, God, he is very emotional about what's going to happen tomorrow night. You want to be out there tomorrow night to see this. Romo returns to San Francisco. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.